In Hans Christian Andersen's The Snow Queen, trolls craft a mirror that warps people's view of the world. One day, the trolls take their mirror up into the sky, and it breaks. And the shards and pieces no larger than a grain of sand rain down on the earth, where they pierce human hearts and turn them to ice and distort one's vision of all that is beautiful and full of love. In the longer version of the story, we learn that Kai and Gerda usually spend their winters playing and drinking hot chocolate together. They heat copper coins on their grandmother's stove and press them against the frosty window to create a perfect peephole for looking out at the winter sky. But when Kai's heart is pierced and vision blurred by the troll's mirror, the wonder and joy Kai felt sitting with Gerda turns to disillusionment and cynicism. The Snow Queen takes Kai away, and for a large part of the story, we think Kai will be lost to winter forever, cold and alone in his gloom. But the courage of a friend, her compassion and empathy, melt the ice around Kai's heart. We can imagine what that might have felt like. It must have been similar to the way it feels to walk inside after a long time out in the cold, when your fingers feel frozen and stiff, and then tingle and ache as they meet the warmth inside and begin to thaw. Gerda helps Kai escape winter, that season when the most obvious and colorful signs of hope go underground, that time when our defenses are up against the cold and we withdraw to conserve what little energy we have. Gerda nearly loses Kai to winter, a season that comes and goes in each of our lives, no matter what the weather outside is doing. As the story goes, the warmth of Gerda's friendship melts Kai's heart. And in that tingling, painful thaw that ensues, Kai cries and cries. Kai's tears wash away the last grain of the troll's mirror. Kai recognizes beauty and kindness again, and the two friends walk hand in hand through the in-between of sorrow and joy, perhaps thinking of the time lost that could have been spent playing together, while simultaneously soaking in the relief that the darkest days are behind them. They step outside into the last days of winter, and see the little shoots of green peeking through the snow. The last days of winter, which incidentally is where we find ourselves in the turning of the seasons. Poet Marilyn Nelson writes, "Spring speaks to each of us in a language our bodies first and then our minds understand. That softening of gust into waft and breeze, those layers of clothing shed, squirrel races spiraling the tree trunks." She says, "One of the first things I notice and remember with delight every spring is the nocturnal song of the peepers. I know they are tiny frogs, but I've never seen one. Yet the first few times I hear their song, I smile, I literally smile. The peepers say that even though there's still a skim of ice floating on that part of the pond, spring will come." About this time, Nelson writes, "though cold still remains, I start to see moths in my headlights. The night, vacant and silent for months, is now more and more full of living things. She continues, there are, of course, regional differences in both experience and metaphor. In some places, spring happens as slowly as lake ice melts. In other places, you go to bed one winter night, and by dinner time the next day, it's summer. Though I'm still dug in for a solitary winter, she says, I can sense the approach of spring. The last few days I've heard birds calling from the thicket and thought, oh, spring is coming, and done a little internal dance. Now, you may be familiar with the pagan observance of Yule in December, or the winter solstice, as it's also known, the longest night of the year. And you may be familiar with the spring equinox in March, the first day of spring when day and night occupy an equal amount of time, the day known to pagans as Ostara. You may be less familiar with Imbolc, which occurs in early February between Yule and Ostara. Imbolc comes before cold has gone and before warmth has fully arrived. For us in the greater Charlotte area, this seems to mean we go from almost t-shirt weather to wearing a winter hat, coat, and gloves and back again. Observers of Imbolc take the opportunity to clear themselves and their homes of winter, burning any greenery left over from Yule, clearing away cobwebs and dust that have collected in the season of rest, the season of preservation and waiting. Observers of Imbolc offer prayers that the possibilities and hopes that have been dormant within them might soon find light. In a number of earth-based traditions, Imbolc marks the moment when the goddess is said to have just healed from the effort of laboring through the longest night of the year to give birth to the sun. Imbolc is not a celebration of certainty, of having left the winter fully behind for a season of renewal and possibility. Instead, early February marks a turning point when the goddess has healed just enough to find her footing, testing if she can eat something more substantial than broth, curious if she is up for a longer walk. Imbolc is a day part fragile and part strong. Imbolc makes no promises or guarantees that we are through forever with long nights, but it is a softening of gust into waft and breeze. It's seeing moths in the headlights, as Marilyn Nelson puts it. Early February. This is like the moment after a hip or knee replacement, when you transfer your weight from the chair to your own feet for the first time, and leaning on whatever support is nearby, feel what it's like to stand now. This is the moment after a vicious encounter with depression, when you have felt overwhelmed, lost, depleted, numb for so long. It's the moment you brush your teeth and smooth your hair, put on clothing and tie shoes, and push your way outside to risk contact with people and things, not yet certain that you're up to it. It's the tentative smile exchanged after a fight. Imbolc is fragile and strong. In the early February of our lives and of our surroundings, hope is not shiny or grand. It's the Lenten rose blooming without apology against a backdrop of dead leaves. Late winter hope is the kind that drops from mushroom gills, sprouts in each occluded eye of the many-eyed potato, and lives in each earthworm segment, surviving cruelty, as Liesl Mueller puts it, the quiet argument that refutes death. Not shiny or grand, but precious all the same. This is the moment easily overlooked when we have the fleeting realization that hope is not foolish, not an empty wish, not energy wasted. Though we sometimes go a very long way without tangible evidence, though the most obvious and colorful signs lie dormant underground a long time, hope is not foolish. Whatever is just beginning for you today, whatever feels uncertain or tentative, whatever feels both fragile and strong, may you pause long enough to feel the signs of renewal within and around you and help prepare the way for spring. Blessed be. Amen.